Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, depending on where you are around the world here on ACB Radio Mainstream, and welcome to this week's edition of ACB Radio Main Menu and Main Menu Live. This week we are live for the full 2 hours tonight, and we're going to be bringing to you tonight a CSUN wrap-up. Tonight with me, I have a number of panelists and experts joining me tonight. First, I'd like to introduce to all of you Daryl Shandro, my co-host. Hello, Daryl.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening, sir. Tonight we have joining us Jay Leventhal from AFB. He's the editor there. And hello, Jay.
Hello, Jeff.
How you doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Great. I don't think we've had you on Main Menu before, and it's been a very, very long time, and so we definitely welcome you to Main Menu this week.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah. And Randy Knapp is back joining us again. Hello, Randy.
Good evening, Jeff. How are you?
Oh, I'm recovering, as you are well aware. We were pretty busy this week, or last week anyway, at CSUN. But I'm doing all right. Welcome aboard. And last but not least, Mika Paikala. Hello, Mika. How are you?
Good evening, Jeff. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing quite well. I'm doing very well.
I think this is my Main Menu debut as well.
Yes, but we've had you on Mainstream before.
Right.
Yes, numerous times, I think.
And unfortunately, Jeff and I didn't get to catch up, but we talked a little bit by email at the conference itself.
Yes, we saw each other a little bit at one of the presentations, and that was about it, unfortunately.
Right.
Yeah, I meant to get with a number of people, and unfortunately it didn't happen, so that's kind of a bummer, but... that's all right. Well, we're going to open the phone lines now, but we will get started here now on our CSUN overview and review. But if people want to call in tonight, the number is 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. If you have any questions related to CSUN, what happened at CSUN, any kind of a tech update that you want that we might have been able to gather from CSUN, then do give us a call. We would love to hear from you. Now let's see. I myself got at CSUN on Wednesday morning, and when did all of you arrive?
Tuesday afternoon.
Oh, you got there a little earlier, huh?
Had to set up our booth.
Oh, you got stuck with booth duty, huh?
A bit, yeah.
And how about you, Mika?
I got there very, very late Monday night. I attended the JAWS-related workshop on Tuesday. Although my typical schedule is to come in on Sunday and just kind of hang around there, or sometimes, as in last year's CSUN, I was involved in some broadcasting. So this, due to my situation with the Navy, I was tied up all Monday, all day with that, and then hopped on a 6 p.m. flight and got there at like 11 o'clock Monday night.
Right. We already have a caller. Let's bring the caller in and welcome them to Main Menu Live. Hello, caller, and welcome. How can we help you tonight?
Hi, Jeff. How are you? This is Shirley.
Hey, Shirley. How can we help you?
How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. Can you hear me all right?
Well, yes, I can.
Okay,
thank
great.
You.
Okay.
I was curious mostly about PacMate updates. I understand that there was a little bit of discussion about new firmware coming out, and of course, just yes. Can you hear me, Jeff?
Yeah, I can hear you now. The last thing we heard was that you heard about the there being a new firmware update, and yesterday there was a release as well.
Right, a news release about the RFD&D.
Yes.
Software, you know, the compatibility with FS Reader.
Correct.
And I'm curious if any of you were able to get any information on that. I realize that came out after the CSUN conference, so I don't know if that was talked about at all during that time or not.
Okay.
And there's also been something mentioned about the BX version that they've improved the space bar, which has been a little bit of a problem. So
okay.
If you'd like to comment on those things,
okay,
I'll be
well,
glad to get off here and
okay,
well, let you go from there.
Okay, well, we'll pass it around, and I'll give you some updates that I have, and then we'll ask others if they have anything. All right, great.
Okay, thank you, Jeff.
Sure, thank you. Okay. Now, the only thing that I'm aware of is that they did not show any new, and if anyone else saw anything, because I honestly did not get a chance to get over and look at all things related to PacMate at all. The only thing that I'm aware of from speaking to Jonathan Mosen before the conference actually is that they did not actually show any new version of the PacMate. But they were showing, were going to be potentially showing the GPS package. Did any of you have any further information on what Freedom Scientific might have been showing in reference to PacMate?
No, I was at the
No,
booth.
I didn't notice any sessions. In prior years, there have been sort of a large number of PacMate-related sessions, but I didn't really see that.
Right,
so
there
much
was
in this year's.
There was one session on PacMate, and I unfortunately was attending another session, so I wasn't able to get to that. So,
they did talk in some general terms about a release of a PacMate later this year that would be centered around Windows Mobile 6, and they talked about the idea that the body of the PacMate would still contain the new hardware.
Okay.
So that it would still fit in the same housing, but that's as much as I know.
Yeah, I haven't heard much about it at all. So, okay. We have another caller.
One thing, Jeff.
Sure, go ahead.
One thing, Jeff, people were kind of talking about is sort of speculation and curiosity as to whether Freedom Scientific will introduce a smaller PDA device, kind of like a small PDA like the Icon or something, that's because the PacMate is kind of large.
Right.
So a bunch of us are sort of wondering, like, if Freedom is in the early development stages of that, but I haven't heard anything definitive.
Yeah.
Other than, you know, that it would be an interesting idea.
We're definitely going to try to get Freedom to come on and talk about all things related to PacMate as things become more clear in reference to where they're headed, when they're ready to direction is heading. We have another caller. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hello, everybody. This is Beth from Newport News, Virginia. Sounds like everybody's doing great tonight, as am I.
Yeah, hey, Beth.
And I had a couple. Hi, I had a couple of questions, please.
Sure.
First of all, the Icon Braille Plus, which was talked about on the last Main Menu.
Uh huh.
And I wondered if any of you guys had seen it. What I'm interested in is, I understand that it has the same keys as the Icon currently being sold, except, of course, for the addition of the Perkins-style
keys, yes.
Dedicated Perkins keys. And I wondered if you guys, I mean, I know it's not out yet at the Braille Plus, but I wondered if you had seen a sample and what you thought of the key layout, because, of course, the non-Perkins keys are going to have to be smushed a little bit more in order to make room for the Perkins. So I wondered if you had seen that. And the other question that I had, and
sure,
I'll get off here and you guys can answer,
okay,
is I have not heard it for the longest time now anything from Barry Scheuer, who, if you recall, I don't know if he was ever on Main Menu, but he does the IRIS, which is, what does it stand for? Oh, shoot, I can't remember now. But it's
that Internet Radio?
Yes.
Yes,
and also he was going to do the Aviva, but that, I understand, is dead in the water. But I wondered if you had caught up with him, and what in the world is going on? Is the IRIS still being sold? Is the Aviva going to be resuscitated? Hmm. What's the deal on that? So thank you very much,
okay,
and I will get off here and listen.
All right, great. Okay,
thanks.
Let's take her. Let's take her last question first. Does anyone know anything about that? His product?
No, I don't.
I think
those products are around anymore. He wasn't at CSUN, certainly not a booth, or the ATIA show either.
Okay.
He was at the summer conventions last summer, but I don't think those products are around.
Okay, and Mika, you had something?
I think the IRIS radios, that are out there, that a certain number of radio reading services purchased are still out there. For instance, I think they might be out in Alaska.
Oh, wow.
But I haven't heard anything new recently, although Barry Schroyer is up here with me in the Boston area, so I could make contact with him and try to get an update.
Okay.
I'm sure.
Well, that would
obviously
be great.
Not for this show, but
sure.
For future.
Okay. Now, before I give you what I learned about the Icon Braille Plus, did any of you have a chance to see it?
Just briefly. I didn't get a demonstration because I have the regular Icon.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, and I'm testing it.
Gotcha.
For Access World.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't need a demonstration of how it works, but it's certainly an interesting keyboard, and the Braille keys will be easier for a lot of people to use than typing numbers on the phone pad.
Yeah. What do you want to say there, Randy?
I saw a demonstration of it. What I saw seemed to be very impressive. I mean, Larry knew his way around things. He was able to show how you could multitask. He was able to show how you could jump between different kinds of audio sources and text sources and having all the different voices in there. But what I wasn't certain about was, for example, the feel of the Braille keys. I really didn't get a good look at that. I noticed that they seem to have rubber on them on some level, and so I'm not sure how pressing them would feel long term. But in terms of him having facility with it, he could clearly get around and do what he needed to do. And so in that respect, I was pretty impressed.
I played with it for about 5 or 10 minutes, and it seemed like the spacing was okay and the firmness, but it's hard to say exactly. You're right, Randy. You know, what would it be like to use it on a long term? You know, it'd be kind of neat to actually take one of those and use it for an hour and kind of see, you know, exactly, you know, especially, you know, in a meeting taking notes or something like that. It'd be kind of interesting to see, you know, what it would be like, if it'd be hard on the hands or anything like that. Okay,
I saw as well the demonstrations that you guys spoke of, and I also went to a session on Saturday morning where there were only a couple people where they were demonstrating access to the Linux prompt using the Icon. And, you know, we each got a chance to play with it a little bit, but essentially you can access a Linux shell.
Cool.
And write programs on commands. It definitely seems like an intriguing device. The main thing that I've seen a little bit in the testing is that sometimes it can get bogged down in terms of the processor, so hopefully they'll work that out with future releases. And to the caller's question, the numeric keys or the phone type keypad are somewhat smaller, but you can definitely still make them out. But the telephone keypad buttons are smaller with the Braille Plus model. They said too that model was kind of a little less rounded, the edges, but that it was the same size or footprint.
It seemed bigger to me, though.
Yeah, it did.
It seemed bigger. I mean, yeah. I went and saw Mark in his booth, and I picked up the Icon, the regular Icon, and it really felt substantially smaller in my hand. I mean, I'm really bad at, you know, measurements. You know, it's 4 inches wide. You know, I'm not even going to do that. But it really felt significantly smaller in my hand, and felt like it really. The other one, I'm not sure, really would fit in your pocket too well. At least it didn't seem like it would.
Right. And I guess, too, the question is, how much input will you be doing, or will you be doing more reading?
Yeah, I'm not really sure I would be writing a novel on it.
Oh,
but,
right.
Yeah, but it's definitely interesting. I want to talk about the session that I went to about programming the Icon. We'll get to that in a few minutes. We have a caller here on the show.
I also have an MSN question.
Okay, great. Thanks, Daryl. Daryl, do you have any comments about the Icon? Or now you didn't get a chance to go to CSUN this year.
No, unfortunately, I was really going to really try to go until the last minute, but there were some complications.
Sure.
Unfortunately, I haven't gotten a chance to see one yet. It looks interesting. Looks like it's going to be a great tool for techie types like us.
Yeah, yeah.
And for people who like to read and listen to podcasts and things, but didn't really see a whole lot on things like, word processing and, you know, some of the applications that someone like a college student might really want to use.
Well, I can tell you that Marlena bought one. She bought it on Friday night, and the on Saturday when we got together for lunch, she was doing nothing but playing with her icon and eating her lunch. And it was hard to get her to break away from her icon. She was sort of getting addicted to the thing.
She does have a lot to offer, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. She was getting kind of frustrated with it because it would keep losing the internet, the wireless internet connection, which the internet is a story unto itself at that hotel. And we won't even get into that. But anyway, let's bring in our next caller. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hello, Jeff. This is Stan.
Hey, Stan.
The big surprise would have been if Marlena didn't buy it.
Yeah. Well,
if you know Marlena.
Well,
but
yeah,
anyways,
exactly.
The question, oh, I'm going to hear this later.
yeah, you are.
a couple of questions I'm interested in. One's a generic question asking you to give a... Well, I'll give you the question. One, what did you happen to see the new, the sort of like a voice note of the Braille Sense?
Oh, the voice sense.
The
voice sense. Yes.
And I was wondering what your thoughts were on that, and then the second one, so I can listen on the stream.
Okay.
Is what. Was there anything that really stood out in this year's show? A friend of mine went to CSUN, but she was no help. She had all sorts of issues in place. She was stuck in just looking at things that totally blind people wouldn't relate to. But anyway.
Okay, sure.
I just wanted to give you that and think about that and mull over that.
Okay, great. Okay.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Dan. Okay. Anyone want to take the voice sense first?
Well, I didn't get a demo, but I got to examine it, and it really seems like a nice product, very well made. And I haven't used the Braille Sense in a long time, but I think the voice sense has a lot packed into it.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be a really good product to watch.
Yeah, it definitely will. How about you, Micah? Did you get a chance to see it?
I did not, no.
Okay. How about you, Randy?
I saw it briefly. Again, I love the form factor. I love the voices. As far as... the internals, I really don't know the command structure well enough of the note taker to be able to comment what I thought of that.
Well, I got a chance and I spoke with Clarence quite a bit about it, and basically it's just for people who might be familiar with the Braille Sense, it's basically the same exact unit with wireless G built in as opposed to B, and I don't think that the other had USB 2. I could be mistaken on that. So, GW, if you're listening, I'm sorry. but it has a USB 2.0 on it, and boy, is it small. It's it felt really sexy in your hand. You know, it felt real small, and so it will be interesting to see if it, you know, kind of competes with the icon or where it really plays in this space. I'm not really sure. You know, if it's really meant to compete with the icon or really where we're, you know, where they're wanting to head with it. But
is it along the same size as the icon or the Braille and Speak?
It's probably a little bigger than the icon. Wouldn't you say, Randy,
okay,
it's a little bit bigger?
I would say it's in that category, yes.
Yeah,
okay.
It might be slightly bigger, only because it seems to have a wider footprint. Wouldn't you say it's more long.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's more long.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not as tall as the icon.
There's not much front to back.
No, not at all. No. No, so it may be really equivalent.
Did it have a visual display like the Braille Sense does?
Oh, boy. Now, I don't know that. I did not ask that.
Well, the visual display kind of sticks up and it, you know, is sloped toward the back.
No, I don't think it did. I don't think it did because I think that's mainly used for Braille, isn't it? You know, so that you can see what the student is reading. Isn't that what sort of that was for?
Yeah, I guess so. You wouldn't see any.
I'm not really sure there would be a reason for that, but we'll find out from Clarence. So Clarence, if you're listening, call in and tell us.
Set us straight.
General Jeff, I would really say this was the, maybe this is the year of the PDA or note taker. I think that's the area where the highlights were at this show, the icon and the voice sense, and the Braille Plus, maybe even one other that I can't think of, but that I think would be what people would say was the highlight of this show, unless they're a low vision person and they're, well, there are no PDAs for low vision people, but there had to be about 10 new CCTVs, and the CCTV market may be a little out of control. There are just so many products.
Yeah, interesting.
Speaking of low vision, we have a question from MSN asking about Zoom text running on Windows Vista.
Yeah, they were talking about Zoom text. In fact, I think they were even showing dual monitor support for Zoom text. And
Vista.
Yeah, and I don't know for sure. Did anyone go to the Zoom text presentation?
No, I didn't go to the presentation.
No,
but they did announce that 9.1 does run on Vista. And
now it was in beta before CSUN, so I wasn't sure if they finally released or what the status was.
No, they haven't released yet, but they're planning to release in early April.
Okay. So similar to Freedom. Eric said that JAWS would be available for the final release for Vista would be available in April.
Right.
So, okay.
Well, we didn't get our build. Toonhead is just mentioning that. Hey, we didn't get our build.
No, we did not get our.
Today.
No, we did not. Eric mentioned that during the. I made it to the. I made it to the presentation for JAWS, and I didn't think I would. And it was sort of a blessing in disguise that I was not able to get into my room until about 11:30 that morning when I got there. So I wasn't able to get anything set up. So that was actually probably a good thing. I just left my stuff at the Bellman stand and ran like a freaking maniac over to the Hilton. And let's go around here. We've heard from Jay and what his thoughts were, but Jay will give you another chance here too to answer her question about what you really thought the highlight of the conference was. So did you want to add any more to that, Jay?
I think IBM is doing some interesting.
Oh yes, I want to talk
also,
about that. Oh yes.
Which may be a little techy for some people, but iAccessible 2 is going to be a new standard that they've developed to replace Microsoft Active Accessibility.
Well, it's not really replacing.
It's adding on to.
It's sort of like a little building block put on top of MSAA. Yeah. Did you get a chance to go to that presentation, Jay?
Yes.
Yeah. Now what did you? I wanted to get your opinion as to what you thought they really said, because it was sort of vague and I wasn't really clear as to exactly what they said. And I think they purposely were sort of vague about it. What do you think? They mentioned that Microsoft's involvement is, well, at least they mentioned that they have communicated with Microsoft. Do you think that Microsoft, I mean, we're obviously not speaking for Microsoft here, and we want to make that really, really clear that we're not speaking on behalf of Microsoft at all. So, but do you think, from what you heard and from what I heard, what is your opinion about where you think Microsoft is headed in support of this, especially with them announcing the fact that Web 2.0 is where they're headed in getting support done?
I think IBM is going beyond what Microsoft is, I don't know if it's willing or able to do and offering this standard because they want, IBM wants their product, Workplace, I think it's called, their suite of applications mm-hmm. to be accessible as an alternative and in open document format and really put themselves on the map. So they're not planning to make money on iAccessible 2. They donated
right.
that to whoever wants to work on it, the AT vendors and the mainstream vendors.
Right.
But they also have the purpose of trying to make their software work, which is good. It means another alternative.
Absolutely. Let's see, Mika, or let's see, let's finish with UJ first. Did you have any other highlights you wanted to mention?
No, I think that covers it.
Okay. Let's actually jump over to Randy next. Randy?
Well, just sort of as a follow-up, though, and the points that you were just discussing, I just wonder where the carrot is for, I mean, aside from the obvious carrots of 508 and other things that have been traditionally there. But, I mean, I think we could all agree that MFAA has not been overwhelmingly successful in terms of what most vendors take on as
it depends how you're
making
spelling
things accessible.
It depends how you're spelling
yes.
carrot.
that's true.
Thank
yes.
you very much. So I guess the question I have is, I mean, you know, Microsoft's a name, and they've thrown out a standard, and now, you know, they're talking about moving away from MFAA into, you know, other tools to try to bring about some accessibility. IBM is saying that they want to enhance this standard with some things that they're doing to try to get their own suite of software accessible to screen reader vendors. But, you know, how is this going to play out with other vendors and you know, what compels anybody to do any of this?
Well, I think, Randy, you raised some really significant points, and I think the only thing we can do is sit back and wait and kind of see exactly where the cards will end up.
Well, I think that you know, there's not only 508. I think there are other situations perhaps where the law intercedes, and then I think unfortunately we're still at the point where it's going to take a lot of grassroots advocacy ultimately coming down to, hey, is it right that I am not able to get an education, or is it right that I'm not able to have a job, or even worse, maybe I'm not able to keep my job because of these issues? And I think there's going to have to be a bunch of hitting of heads against brick walls in order to start to get them to move a little bit more.
Sure. Okay, Randy, what else you got for us? Randy?
I'm sorry. That's
okay.
I didn't realize it was turning to me. Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with you. And I also think, in some respect, this is sort of coming down to this whole notion of, you know, for years Microsoft has been used to being the engineer driving the train. I'm not clear how receptive they're going to be to someone who's coming along and saying, you know, we'd like to drive it too. I don't know. I mean, my hope is that ultimately this all makes sense, but, you know, if we're simply having competing standards and they're wrestling for how to do it, I don't know that that's not a good thing. I think
yeah.
they need to come together and embrace something that everybody signs on to and has ownership of, and that they get it such that the authoring tools and the other kinds of things that people bring to bear are so such that you have to work to take it out rather than work to put it in.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, did you have any other highlights, Randy, that you wanted to, you know, like what you thought were the best of CSUN?
Well, I still think it's an interesting issue about the way in which note-takers are falling out. I mean, you've got, on the one hand, new proprietary-based note-takers with line-specific interfaces like the Icon Plus, like the VoiceSense, although I guess you wouldn't argue that that's necessarily new, but it's one more piece in their puzzle.
Yeah. Well, it's a cheaper solution to the you know, having a Braille product.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, you have a whole plethora of smart cell phones and PDA cell phones that have competing screen reading products for those phones. And you know, what I saw at the show was some real division among the hearts of the blind. I mean, it used to be you'd go to these shows and everybody had a Braille and speak, and then we went through a period of time where everybody had a Braille note. And now, it's like note taker de jure. There's a percentage here and there's a percentage there. And I think you're going to see a period of time where the market is fragmented until we as a community decide what we really want to stand behind.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Okay. Did you have anything else, Randy, as far as highlights? We're going to get to some specifics here in a minute. But
I think, for me still, I think... No, I do not to single out anybody, because I guess we really can't make a call on all of this until everybody comes out with their official releases. But it just seemed to me that the beta 2 of the GW Micro screen reader for Vista looked really robust to me. And,
yeah.
You know, and that they've got issues resolved with security. And I'm not saying that Freedom won't get there ultimately, but it doesn't appear like they're there yet. And so... you know, given that the role has usually been reversed, where Freedom usually comes out first and then eventually, you know, GW catches up. In this case, I think we have to give a little love to GW for blazing a little trail here.
Yeah, I would tend to agree there. But as I've stated elsewhere, I mean, don't worry, Freedom will get there. They're going to have to, you know, they'll come out okay. You know, they're going to be fine. All right, Micah, your turn.
Well, in terms of kind of highlights,
right,
and general points from the show, I thought the speech on Wednesday morning from John Kemp was interesting.
I missed that.
Not only from just the technology perspective, but an overall disability policy perspective. His speech covered more areas in that arena as opposed to technology specifically. And he hit on some interesting points just about how people with disabilities kind of interact in the society. For instance, he brought up that if you're a person with a disability and you go to a cocktail party, like the first thing somebody might say to you is that, you know, my aunt's friend's husband has a disability. And he just kind of, you know, said that somehow accessibility needs to be made more sexy and mainstream and interesting. You know, he had a whole spiel to it, but it was kind of interesting just beyond technology, some of his remarks, and hopefully those are webcast somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know if they were recorded or not.
Taking that onto the discussion we were having a few minutes ago about the emerging standards, my comment there would be that we really need to get the mainstream information technology community more involved with this, both in terms of web and software applications. I mean, we can develop all the standards we want, but if mainstream IT isn't really participating or on board, then it may not really advance our cause very much. I've been going to CSUN since 2000, and I think we've made some strides, but that we really need to have more mainstream software and device makers there, at least at the table and at other forums. Because I don't think the general IT community has really embraced accessibility. Usually accessibility is kind of brought in for government contracts or specific reasons, but it's not, you know, if it works out of the box, we're kind of lucky, but just out in the commercial world out there, for people who are blind getting jobs, you know, a lot of commercial software is still not very accessible. There were some comments made at one of the sessions that one of my colleagues went to, that basically said it was very difficult for blind people to get either entry-level or even mid-level jobs because of these accessibility problems with general IT software and web applications, and just kind of going into the how that can limit what people can do, you know, in their given job. Highlights another topic that seemed to come up a lot was DAISY.
Yes, there was lots of DAISY.
I didn't really attend any of the DAISY sessions, but I kept seeing DAISY everywhere in the program, so
yeah.
That was sort of promoted this year.
There were two or three. There were two or three DAISY sessions, you know, almost every day.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of neat.
That's because of the educational component, though.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And the textbooks for high school and elementary. Yeah. I'd say also Windows Vista was kind of a theme with, as we've said, Freedom, GW Micro, and some of the other vendors all
right.
actively demonstrating what they had either available or in beta for Vista.
Did Saratech demonstrate Vista there?
I saw Saratech in their booth, but I'm not sure that they had a session.
They didn't have a session, but boy, I went by their booth three or four times. And every time I went by there, they were swamped. They were always busy. Mike was a couple of times I actually didn't see Mike. He was probably out gallivanting around somewhere. And but the times that I was there, boy, he had his staff buzzing, man. There were people there all the time, which is really kind of exciting to hear. You know, it's kind of neat.
They have some new remote access solutions where you can access another PC.
Yeah, RIM, right?
RIM and RAM.
RIM and RAM, yep.
And they're supposed to be emailing me some information and a test on it.
Yeah, they need to get ROM and they'll have everything complete. leave it to Mike. He'll come up with an acronym for ROM.
Right. And I'd agree, too, that the PDAs were kind of a theme. I'm kind of thinking myself, you know, whether I think the three I'm kind of thinking of are some flavor of the icon, a Braille Note PK, or one of these Windows mobile devices. I'm kind of looking for something smaller. So it was good to see there were several icon sessions and demonstrations. And I think for the last several years, the PDAs have really been kind of a highlight of the show. But not, you know, there wasn't, as far as I know, like a brand new one announced at the show.
Yeah, no, we kind of heard about the icon before CSUN, so.
Right.
Yeah. Well, now we heard, Daryl and I heard from Ranger 1138. Now, this guy is a pretty mysterious guy. No one seems to know who he is. He sort of wears the mask, you know, similar to the Lone Ranger, and but we actually asked him to appear with us on Main Menu this week, and unfortunately, due to other commitments, he was not able to make it. We'll get back to that in just a minute. Let's bring in our caller. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
I'm afraid to say, speak of the devil, but.
Oh, yeah, speak of the devil. Here he is.
I just wanted to throw my hat in the ring about what I found exciting at CSUN this year. I saw the icon, and I remember when Mark was first talking about putting that thing together, and it's so amazing. It's so awesome to see one of us really get together and start with an idea, fund it himself, and really get it going and land a deal like the one he landed with APH is really exciting. I saw the product. I didn't actually get to see it at his booth. I saw it through one of the owners of the product. As you said, Jeff, I was real busy. And I unfortunately didn't even get to walk around the exhibits this year, but as I met with various folks, I got to see what they were showing. And for me, if it sways Mika, any of your thinking, right now I'm really excited about my mobile smartphone with MobileSpeak Pocket, and I'm about to go and invest in one of these little Kinect 12 displays from Humanware, which is just it's very attractive. It's sleek. It's quick. It's responsive. And I think you guys are right on target with some of the stuff you're saying about the evolution of these products is definitely moving. And I think that the only way that some of these guys are going to be able to survive and continue to be team players at things like Mobile Speak Pocket as they mature is to get off the ghetto hardware, man, and really start embracing the stuff. There's enough stuff out there. There's enough phones and PDAs and things like that. That I mean, why haven't we seen a pack-made version of Jaws that can be run on a PDA? I mean, it's possible. You know, and this is something that I hope that at some point they release, because I think that it's a great product on the Pac-Mate, but boy, you need a hell of a big pocket to carry that thing around. <don't you>?
it takes
that pocket PC to a whole new level. And you know, I use Mobile Speak in my pocket, and with all the new broadband that's available through the phone companies and things like that. Jeff, you and I have discussed it. I mean, I run the majority of the companies that way when I'm on the road.
Yeah,
you know, so it really is an interesting time. I found the excitement around Vista. I heard great things about GW's latest support for Vista. It's very robust. We've had a play with it, and it rocks. It's a great product, and they've done their homework. They've done an awesome job, and I think that I don't know what happened to Freedom. And
GW Micro is supporting the user account control and some of the other security features in Vista.
Yeah, they are.
And there may be others, but that was one of them.
It's intriguing to me. It's like saying, listen, you can wear, here's our new version of our Rolls Royce, but don't lock the garage or anything when you use it, because you won't be able to pull it out of the garage. How could you put out something without supporting the main thing that Microsoft themselves is touting about the operating system, which is security?
Well,
and go ahead.
I try to stay somewhat balanced in this in reference to, you know, here on Main Menu anyway, you know, as far as, I've even stated in other forums that, you know, Freedom's going to have to do it. The issue of security.
Oh, no, there's no doubt, guys, that they are the market leader, and they've got a huge market that they've got to do this for.
Yeah.
It's just really sad for the folks that have made the investment in that technology that they weren't there on that day. And I think that whoever thinks that Windows Vista is going to roll out as slowly as XP did is mistaken. I think that the numbers are showing that differently.
Well, Microsoft came out with a report yesterday that said that that Vista has doubled in sales over Windows XP.
20 million copies.
Yeah, that's
20
crazy.
Million copies have already shipped. That's crazy. That's what XP did in the first year.
Yep.
So it's going to be an interesting time. I'm glad that Serotech is a part of it, and I'm excited to see what people like GW are doing, and like you guys, I'm interested in seeing what Freedom's going to do as well. Not so
now,
much
Mike,
as an AT
you,
person, but as a blind person.
Yeah. Go ahead, Daryl.
Now, Mike, you work with the sidebar in Vista, right?
Yeah, we do. Sure.
Yeah. Now that was something really interesting. Now, did either one of you, Mika or Randy? I know, Jay, I spoke to you earlier, and I know you didn't get a chance to get over there. Did you guys attend both the JAWS and GW Micro presentations?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I was telling you about the fact that we received some email from Ranger 1138, and who's...
I'm going to go ahead and drop off here,
okay.
And you guys keep on talking.
Oh,
and
okay,
I'm enjoying the program, guys. I just wanted to put in my 2 cents about the PDA stuff.
Yeah.
And just
cool.
Give
well,
kudos to Mark.
We want
to
congratulate you too, Mike. On you seem to really made a big splash there at CSUN this year, and very commendable of you.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out an acronym for ROM now.
Well, don't worry, you'll wake up at 2 a.m. and you'll figure it out.
And I'll call you.
Let's see. Home. You called me at 4:30. I wouldn't doubt it. All right, we'll see you.
All right,
take care, guys.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay. 866-400-5333. 866-400-Jeff. Now, Daryl, you have I sent you a copy of Ranger's a document, and why don't we review the there's a paragraph there about his perceptions about Freedom Scientific and GW Micro. I'd like to, caller, if you can hold on 1 second, we'll get to you in just a minute, all right?
All right, let's see. Let me pull it out here.
Now, I don't know if you caught this or not, Mika, but this was sort of...
Okay, here we go. Are you ready?
Yeah, we're ready. Go ahead.
I thought Doug's presentation on WindowEyes was a turning point in the industry. But a few short hours earlier, did Eric say that the Windows sidebar was all visual and that we as users didn't need it in Vista? Then Doug not only demonstrates how to get to tab through using Windows plus G and also shows that WindowEyes reads the weather gadgets in ways that are not visible on the screen. You have to detach from the gadget from the sidebar in order to read the information visually that WindowEyes reads when it's attached directly to the sidebar. Very impressive.
Did you catch that, Mika?
Basically JAWS or WindowEyes works with the Windows Vista sidebar. JAWS doesn't, and Freedom Scientific presumes that blind people don't need it. That kind of upsets.
Well, I think we need to be careful there, Daryl. I think we need to be careful. I don't want to, you know, definitely put, you know, words in their mouth. You know, that's not a good thing to do. But it is interesting that the tone was. I mean, I was there, and Eric said, "Well, I don't use it, and it really is really visual, and it does take up screen real estate." And even, I mean, I talked to.
But if Microsoft made it accessible, guys, I mean.
Well, but here's the thing, and I'm going to get your opinion on this, Mika. But here's the thing, you know, this is a situation where, you know, it could be that Eric just didn't know that. I mean, I'm not trying to make excuses for Eric, but I'm not really sure how well documented that is either. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to trying to say that Eric is incorrect here. All I'm saying is that I'm not really sure how well documented getting to that is and all that. I just don't know. I just don't have enough information to be able to make a real fair judgment of this at this point. But did you
not to butt in here, but I think it's the vendor's business to know.
Oh, fair point. Fair. That's
And I think that if he didn't know and Doug did know, then you gotta give Doug his due.
There's no doubting that, Randy. You got that right.
I'm certainly sure that there'll be enough time for Eric to reconsider his evaluation of that. If he's being beaten up by his competitor, he's going to respond. But the bottom line is, if you had a demonstration where somebody chose not to show it and felt it was trivial, and another guy showed it and said, here's how you access it, that's not a function of anybody being negative toward one vendor or another. That's a function of what is.
Well, that's true.
What I think upset me when I heard about this is I don't like, I kind of have a little bit of a problem if I believe, whether it's, you know, whether it turns out to be fact or not, if I believe that somebody is making a decision like that for me when I find out that, you know, it's not like it was something that was extremely difficult to do, and somebody may have made a presumption that I didn't need it because I'm blind.
True. Okay, Mika. Now you had an opportunity to attend both sessions, and what did you come away with in reference to that?
I frankly didn't remember anything relative to the sidebar in particular, or kind of wanting it. Although the gadgets that I've read about in Vista seem intriguing.
Yeah.
So I didn't specifically. I may have remembered a vague thing about the sidebar not working, or that you could do everything with other menu shortcuts.
Yeah, you were in the far back of the room, and I was sort of sitting by the wall, and then the guy that asked about it was up near the front. And And I actually raised my hand. I was going to ask the same question about the sidebar, and because I was kind of interested interested in it. But yeah, it was.
But
it
definitely
was,
in the GW presentation, you know, they were showing the user account control and user switching, and
yeah,
I'm sure Freedom will button those things down, but they seem to be ahead in those regards, at least in what they were showing.
At least today they are. Yeah.
I mean, I think perhaps Freedom is thinking that not that many of their customers have it, you know, today, but I'm hopeful that they'll incorporate all these features.
Hey, this is just a big, in some ways, this is just a big game, right? GW Micro and Saratech and those guys happen to be on the offense right now, and Freedom is kind of, it seems anyway, on the defense, and maybe that will change.
This industry changes. I mean, who knows what a week will bring, you know?
Right.
Who knows? I mean, that's why I've always said that to compare what reality will be once all the final versions of the products are out is not, you know, who knows? Who knows what reality will be then?
The whole issue is really that there'll be final releases for release one, and then somebody's going to release two. It's no different than it's ever been.
Nope.
I think what the community is going to have to decide, though, is who's doing a best job of going after features that really improve overall accessibility for them, and how many features that they're getting are fluff and not real substantive.
Well, I can tell you this, that I think Vista will take off a lot more due to its security features. I've already been seeing it in circles that I'm in, that, you know, where there's been discussions about, well, not specifically in my department, but there's been discussions, you know, throughout people that I've, you know, spoken to, where, you know, once the big issue right now, of course, is drivers and everything, right? So, you know, within the next 9 to 12 months, I think you're going to be seeing a huge adoption of Vista, much more so than we saw for Windows XP. But who knows, you know, I guess I'm as good as all the other psychics out there.
Now, Jeff, did you get a sense of what would you want to do with the sidebar? Like, I must have.
Well, that's the
that.
Thing,
like,
too. You know, I mean, it's sort of a sexy looking thing for sighted people because they can just see it on their screen all the time. I have not seen any gadgets that would make me go, ooh, I got to have that.
It sounds a little bit like the system tray.
Yeah, it's really a glorified system tray. You're exactly right. It's a mini browser, really, is what it is. I mean, it's a way of putting a bunch of gadgets on a screen where you can quickly get between them, and get at some information pretty easily. I think you're going to see it. It reminded me of the Google desktop. In fact, I even asked Google about this during the Google presentation, and we'll get to Google here in a few minutes. But my question to them was, hey, your sidebar, what are you doing to make that accessible? I mean, it would be nice if they could provide a key, you know, keyboard shortcut that would put focus into the HTML view. That'd be nice.
Right.
You know. Their answer was, well, we don't really have any comment. We don't know what's going on with that. So, yeah, very interesting. Let's bring in our caller. We do have a caller. Caller, we want to thank you very much for holding on. And welcome to Main Menu Live. How can we help you tonight?
Hi, it's Beth again. You're not getting that many calls, so I figured I could call in one more time.
Okay.
And I have two quickies.
Okay.
One thing is, it's my opinion that we as a group don't need to figure out which company is doing the best. It's we as individuals, because, you know, let's remember that we are each consumers, and each one of us is going to have different likes and dislikes.
Correct.
So I think it's up to us as individuals, instead of as a group, to say which one we think, you know, which company we think is doing the best job.
Okay.
And the other thing that I wanted to ask was, I know Jay, and I don't remember when, in Access World, did an article about this, the hardware Daisy machines. I wondered if you guys had gotten a chance to see them, and if so, which one did you like the best? And I'm going to hang up now and listen on the air.
Okay, thanks, Beth.
Thank you very much. Bye.
All right, great. Let's handle her first question first. Jay, keep that one in mind about the Daisy hardware players. But I want to talk about this, about is it user choice that we're concerned about, or is it something more? And I want Randy to take that first. Randy, what do you think about that? Is it really user choice, or is there more involved in that?
I think it's user choice, but I also think that it's probably a little tougher see for the user to fail when it comes to making these choices, because you have brand new companies that haven't been here very long, and the user has to really figure out, will they be here, you know, 5 years, 10 years out? And then the other thing that they're going to have to figure out about the old established companies is where they perceive their commitment to be to the whole process. Are they still active? Are they still kind of willing to step out and plow new territory? Or are we getting a lot of repackaging of things that, you know, that aren't necessarily things have to have, but would simply be polished on an apple? So I guess my feeling is, I think choice is good, but I also think in this case choice can sometimes be overwhelming.
Well, what do you think about that, Mika?
I would agree with that, especially in terms of the PDAs, not to get too into that, but it struck me before that now every company is coming out with a PDA, a blindness PDA, and that there's just so many. But I mean, in terms of the screen readers in Windows Vista, I'm hopeful and sure, you know, that they both will evolve and have the features that we want. Though, as mentioned, it was interesting that GW Micro had their release of WindowEyes available on the same day as the Vista release.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as we said, they're in some respects, they're kind of leading in at least the early availability of Vista accessibility, along with Freedom Box too.
Absolutely, yeah. I was just going to say that too, or Saratech. Now, Daryl, what do you think? You and I have discussed this a little bit too about user choice, and I tend to agree with both what Randy and Mika have stated, but I think there's also a piece of this that we're sort of not remembering, and that is that a lot of times there's not a lot of choice by the user, because state agencies and other groups like that make those decisions for the user. Whether that's right or wrong, that seems to be what reality is, at least from conversations you hear from, you know, many people.
Well, right. I'd like to start out real quick with an example of this situation. I telecommute. I'm a knowledge-based technical writer and a forum moderator, and I do a number of other things, and I use a number of web-based applications. I have 4 screen readers on my system. Each one, you know, I have JAWS, I have WindowEyes, I have NVDA, and I have System Access, Saratech System Access. Hmm. Now, each of those screen readers has its various strengths and weaknesses and reasons to use and or not to use them. Now, having said all of that, owing that I use JAWS and WindowEyes most of the time, what do I find myself doing? I find myself most of the time running back to JAWS. Why? That's because it's the screen reader that I am most familiar with, and I've got a job to do when I'm working, and I don't have time to muck around with stuff that I'm not familiar with.
Exactly.
The importance is on the job, not on playing with the assistive tech. So I think user choice is a big part of it, in the fact that people are going to, in many cases, gravitate towards what they've started with. It's going to be very, very hard, even in the area of assistive technology, to get anybody to change until they get into a situation maybe where they're unfortunately compelled to. But the other side of it is we have to ultimately come down to which solution or solutions gives us the most accessibility.
That's right.
You know, if WindowEyes does something that JAWS can't do, if there's something about WindowEyes working with an application where the choice is, you know, the application is virtually inaccessible with JAWS, or it works well with WindowEyes, or vice versa, then I'm going to pick the screen reader that works.
And it is unfortunate that probably in a good 70 or 80% of cases where people do have assistive technology, it has been, you know, it has been issued to them by a state agency, and they have had little or no choice. And in that case, what do you do?
Exactly. Well, I mean, even Clarence from GW Micro in GW Micro presentations in their suite in past years at CSUN has said, "Hey, listen, the ideal world, have multiple screen readers." You know,
I was just going to say that, Jeff. I really have to give it to Clarence.
I mean,
I've heard him say the same thing, like, get both of them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for a guy to sit there and say that about his own company, to say, listen, you know, we're not the be-all, end-all solution. If there's some, you know, we're not going to support every application. But if another screen reader does, hey, then, you know, if you need to get a job done, then do it. And, wow, I mean, that's a pretty bold statement. So
we have some MSN.
Okay, before we okay, we'll get to them in just a second, Daryl. Jay, let's answer the caller's question about the hardware Daisy players, and then we do have a phone call, and then we'll take the MSN questions. Okay, Daryl?
Certainly.
Okay, great. Okay, Jay, go take it away.
Okay. It's interesting that there's so much talk about Daisy, and the average person probably still hasn't had that much experience with it. We're kind of in limbo until the National Library Service has something. We've reviewed a number of players in Access World. We reviewed the Telex Professor this month. My preference is for the Victor readers, from what I've seen, but the whole market is going to have to change because the general market companies are going to stop producing CD players and go to players for products that you can download or
yeah, for NLS, right?
Yeah, and yeah. Just in general, the general market is going to stop having CD players available. And actually, that's... I don't think Plextor was there at CSUN this year. Did any of you see them?
I did not.
No, I did not see them.
I saw Telex.
I saw the U.S. representative.
Oh, you did? Okay.
RTI?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were in one of those small, the Hall of Cities.
But the reason that Plextor wasn't there is that they've announced that they're not... The company is not going to make CD players at some point soon. I don't remember exactly when, but we're going to have to see that change and a whole new bunch of players come on the market, which is good. We'll have more products to test, but there just aren't going to be a lot of Daisy users, except for Bookshare and RFB&D, until the National Library Service put something out there.
JD,
but RFB&D, Peter is writing saying, hey, in the educational arena, they use a lot of Daisy players.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
True. Jay, do you think that will lower the price? I mean, going away from a disc-based, you know, player, do you think that will lower the price of the units?
I hope so. Nothing seems to lower the price.
I guess I was just hoping, you know, pie in the sky kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, fewer moving parts, so maybe you're right.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, well, let's bring in our caller because they've been here for a little while, and then we'll get to our MSN questions. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi there, it's Tina.
Hello, Tina.
Colorado here. Hi. And my main comment in terms of some of these discussions that have been going on this evening. First of all, the issue of PDAs and note takers, I'd say, you know, at this point, I think we are in a state of kind of overwhelm because I was trying to help a couple friends make a decision, you know, should they even buy one right now or should they wait or what should they do? And, you know, because I have a friend whose Braille light was starting to die and we thankfully got our data out of it before it really went. But she ended up just buying a new, a pre-owned Braille light, you know, from somebody off of the net. And, you know, so she just basically went with what she knew, you know, even though it was used and doesn't have a warranty and all this kind of thing, because, you know, she knows that overall it's reliable.
Sure.
Whereas we were trying to sort out, okay, you know, which one, the Braille Sense or a, you know, Braille Note or a what, you know, and does, you know, for her own needs, I was trying to steer her away from a PacMate because she isn't really much of a Windows user in terms of, you know, I mean, she does what she really has to do, but that's about it. And so I was trying to find something that was more, you know, designed, quote-unquote, for a blind person, you know, from that frame of reference. But, yeah, I mean, it was pretty crazy. We were trying to figure out, okay, now, you know, for $6,000, which one is really the best?
Sure.
You know, it was, and, you know, she ended up buying a Braille Aid 40 for $800 off the internet and saving herself a ton of money and figuring that it'd last for a while.
Okay.
So that really is, huh?
Anything else, Tina?
Yeah, as far as the issue of screen readers in that same respect, in terms of is it more of a group or a user thing, I tend to actually think that it's more of a user thing, you know, a user-based perspective as well, because some of the people that I know are, you know, high-end power, you know, techie users, whereas some of them, you know, if they can read their email, that's all they really want to do.
Sure.
And so as long as they can find, you know, simple ways with whichever screen reader to do that, where they don't have to memorize all the commands and the whole manual or whatever. You know, certain screen readers have better built-in help systems, or, you know, certain screen readers, you know, announce things in slightly different ways that certain people like, and, you know, so I really do think it's a user perspective, and as far as the attitude of by both of them, hey, that's a pretty impressive attitude.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
And for somebody to say that about their own, you know, company in terms of competition, I figure that's pretty commendable.
Yeah, that really is, you know, pretty amazing.
I've never heard
actually.
Anybody from Freedom Scientific say anything of
well,
that sort.
Yeah, I.
And so,
you know, it's very interesting. Okay,
yeah,
Tina.
It is. It really is. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. 866-400-5333. 866-400-JEFF, if you'd like to call in tonight and participate in the show. Okay, Daryl, let's take it over to you. And
I think Randy wanted to say something. And then.
Okay, go ahead, Randy.
I just wanted to comment on the choice of the person that the lady was advising over a note-taker, and that is that, you know, here we are, those of us that probably consider ourselves fairly technically adept, saying, gee, you know, more screen readers the merrier. And on the other hand of the spectrum, we have a user who said, you know, I already know the interface I know.
Yep.
I don't want to learn another interface. I want something that I can use immediately because I have to work immediately and I have to be productive immediately.
Yep.
So while it might be ideal for some of us to have multiple screen readers because we want the best possible access based on the program we're using, I think most people are not in that position where they can afford to make a decision like that.
That's true.
And then you have to sort through the whole issue about how some vendors say that their choice of keystrokes for their interface is more optimal, or you have other vendors who will say, well, gee, with my program, you don't have to memorize as many keystrokes because the way my program works. And then the question becomes, who decides the truth in all of this? And
well, the user does, really.
Well, that's exactly right. So, I mean, I think that is sort of the point, and that is that, and then to add one more layer of complication, there are vocational rehab counselors I deal with in the state of Ohio that when you say screen reader, they think product.
Oh, sure.
And they don't understand that there are multiple screen readers and that there are multiple options. So,
well, I think that's the case in many states.
So I think it's incumbent upon the user to do their due diligence, whether they really want to or not, or whether they feel like that's a complicated issue or not. Whatever choice they make, they're going to live with it, and probably for a long time. So I think it's important for people, if, you know, if their budgets and aptitude can deal with it, sure, multiple's fine. But I think for most folks, an educated choice is what they're really going to be about making.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Randy, very much. All right, Daryl, let's hand it over to you and let's get the questions going.
Well, we've got a couple of questions that are somewhat related. So Peter is asking about, is there any news, anything new from Adobe on the accessibility of their products? And then Tina had asked a while back, did any of you attend any of the sessions covering the implementation of the National Instructional Materials Accessibility Act?
Oh, very interesting. I did not, personally. Did anyone else attend any of those?
No, I did not.
No.
How about you, Jay?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
We're going to have somebody on. That would be something good to that cover, because I know Bookshare is involved with it. And
yeah, that would be good.
Organizations are. How about Adobe?
Yeah, well, now that...
I can comment about that. I spent a fair amount of time putting their access manager on the grill over a number of issues.
Well, good.
One of which was accessible Flash, and said, you know, you guys talk about the fact that you know, Flash could be accessible, and you say you have links off of this, but when I go out to a site and I say, gosh, you guys are using Flash, and this really stinks, and it needs to be made accessible, I get comment back like, well, how do we make it that way? Where are the code examples that we can look at? And why can't they have some kind of an automated tool that says this is where it's broken and this is how you fix it?
Yeah.
So I raised those questions with Adobe, and I got a long silence, which essentially said, well, the best we can do is author a best practices type of situation, which reminded me very distinctly of conversations we used to have Microsoft when they would say, well, you know, we provided the accessibility hooks to the vendors. It's kind of up to them to figure it out.
Yeah.
So... and then when we got around to talking about, again, the whole notion of PDAs and how they're developed and the tagging and all of this sort, I mean, again, he basically said, well, we can provide a way, but we really don't have a good way of making it painlessly retrofittable. So I have to tell you that I was very disappointed with the response that they have. Now, I mean, they are saying that they're committing more engineers to the whole issue of trying to do something about making PDFs more accessible, and they want to try to pull together some more examples of accessible Flash, but you know, they never even talked about a game plan or target dates or projects that would address this, or how I could help companies like Progressive get there sooner. So I have to say that in my view, they attended the conference to be seen, but they didn't have anything constructive to say.
I'm just wondering if part of that, Randy, is because of the new CS3 release, which I tried to get some information out of him on that, and unfortunately, he really wasn't, you know, able to really discuss it. And they released released some information today, being the 27th, on CS3, and I'm just wondering if we're going to see some improvements there. I have his business card, and he has agreed to talk with me about setting up a time that they might be able to come on Main Menu Live and talk to everybody. So that might be kind of interesting. Okay, Daryl, do you have anything else?
We do. We have a question from Steve who asks if any of you attended the Linux related accessibility presentations. I'm assuming GNOME and Orca and some of the Sun. Microsystems related thing.
I attended a session on the IBM Linux screen reader and was pretty impressed with what they're doing. It's kind of, again, sort of difficult to talk about and repeat what they said, but they really have some impressive work going on, and they've been doing it for a much shorter time than Sun Microsystems has. For those of us who've been at CSUN before and maybe even gone to some of the Sun sessions, which had really good food at some times, but not that much information. Their screen reader working along with magnification, and with something called Braille TTY, that's a Linux-based
Now, is this Orca or is this something else?
No, this is the IBM screen reader. They don't come up with clever names for things. That's really the name of it, the Linux
screen reader. Okay. All right. Well, they're porting that over then from the, are they porting some of the user interface over from the old IBM screen reader on DOS and OS 2?
I don't think so. Some people thought that was too techy and too complicated, but this is seems much simpler, and it works well with Firefox.
Okay.
And I'm just trying to look through my notes. It can work with spreadsheets and word processors. They demonstrated it with their workplace office suite, and they have their own script language. It really seems like they've done a lot of work in a short period of time.
Did anyone see the Orca presentations? I know that our friend Don Barrett was telling me they were, I didn't get over there myself, they were handing out a CD that's bootable directly into Orca and the screen reader.
Yeah, Jeff,
I
attended the Orca Linux install presentation where basically they put this CD in a laptop and it was a fully talking Linux install. You had to hit something like F5, 3, enter, and from that point on the install would talk. And in fact, they handed out these CDs along with a note in Braille telling you what keystrokes to hit to get it going. And that was a presentation by Joni Diggs as well as another gentleman.
Oh, cool.
Who's involved with Orca.
Oh, Mike Peterson.
And my understanding is that they have a an Orca wiki where they kind of describe some of the use of this and how to get it set up. And they actually, the CD they handed out was a pre-release of whatever flavor of Linux this is. But I think that people can or will be able to soon download that. And
an ISO image.
It seemed, interesting, but I'm not ready to jump over to Linux from Windows, but it seemed, something on a second computer to try or,
Well, it's definitely something fun to, be a geek with anyway.
But I was impressed with the talking install because that's really a problem with Windows installation to a large extent, that it can be difficult to get the install talking unless you have the exact specific hardware or unless you do a scripted install with a winnt.sif file. I think that part of it is good that they're even focusing on installing the operating system.
Hmm. Neat. We have a caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi there, it's Tina again.
Hey, Tina, what's up?
Well, actually, speaking of the whole Linux side of things, I wonder, was the flavor of Linux they were talking about, was it Ubuntu?
Yes.
Because I know that they have an ISO image of a live CD that you can run, and actually there's a free ship it button on their website, too, where you can order a specific CD, whether you want the normal flavor of it or the educational version of it or the... because they have a bunch of educational programs or, I forget what other kinds there are. There's probably a developer's type of a installation. I mean, there's a number of different spin-offs of it, but, wow, I want that Orca thing. That'd be really cool to try. If it's a live CD, that'd be especially cool.
Well, watch the Main Menu mailing list, and I'm sure as we get the websites and links to these various items, we will post them there.
Okay, yeah, because the live CD thing, I'd be really curious to try.
Yeah, I can find that wiki and post it.
Because it's supposed to, the live CD is just supposed to start up and run, as long as you have a bootable CD-ROM drive. Also, on a slightly different tangent, were there any presentations on the Mac with,
VoiceOver?
Do what?
A VoiceOver?
Yeah. And also... have they shown any of those little bitty teeny Macs, those little I don't know exactly what you call them, but they're little, they're smaller than a laptop, but they're almost about the size of a portable CD drive.
I didn't see that, but I did saw the $100 laptop that
is
the $100 laptop that's being distributed to children around the world. I did see that.
Going to make it accessible.
Yeah, the son's working on it, and actually it's kind of funny. I saw Joni and Peter Korn and Mike Peterson in the airport. In fact, we rode the shuttle over together, and Peter Korn guided me to my gate. The great man that he is. Yeah. So he.
And Joni's really cool too.
She's neat. Yeah, yeah. And
okay, well, I'll continue listening on the stream.
Okay, great.
Thanks,
Tina.
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
Bye.
Yeah. It was really interesting. It it looked really rugged, that little $100 laptop, and.
And it has a crank on it.
Yeah. Now I didn't see the crank, but then again, I didn't get a chance to. To really do much with it. He whipped it out and opened up the keyboard and
supposedly you have a crank on it to charge the battery when it's dead, so that you know, since most third world places actually don't like have issues with electricity. And
well, they sent a bunch of these over to a third world country, and they came back like in 6 months to find out what they were doing with them, and the majority of the people were using them as nightlights.
Wow.
Well, you think about it. I mean, you know, why would they use it for anything else if they, you know,
especially
they're not getting
if they
the
don't
training?
Have the internet.
I mean, well, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. So.
That's unfortunate.
Speaking of the internet, Jeff.
Yeah.
One product that I thought was interesting was the browser. Oh, guys, help me with this. It's the Firefox.
Oh, Firefox, yes.
That's what they call it. And what the reason that I think this is interesting is because, theoretically, a person without a screen reader could have this loaded on a computer, and they would be able to access the Internet with speech support and do basic browsing and downloading of files and things of this sort. And the thought process behind this was to make it available where there may be computer systems, say in libraries or things of this of that nature, where the library may have a computer but doesn't have screen reading, and so you know, they wanted to offer this as a potential solution. And the other thing that they had was some sample files on the CD as well to illustrate some methods they're using to try to access things like Ajax. And so I haven't played with that, but I fully intend to.
Yeah, me too.
That certainly has ramifications for our folks, especially some of the folks that we serve that are low income, that maybe just can't get the bread together for a screen reader. They could certainly use the software and at least do some things on the computer in that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
NVDA.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's also NVDA too. Oh, and I saw him at the conference too. How many of you had an opportunity to meet the NVDA author?
Michael Curran,
yeah. Thank you, Daryl. Name was slipping me there for a minute. Did you get Mika or Jay or Randy, did you get a chance to meet him?
No.
I did not.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I saw him really, really briefly. He was at, I think, the Google presentation. Was it Google or... He was at one of the presentations, and I saw him and shook his hand and I congratulated him, and then I never saw him again. I went by the booth, and every time I went by there, he wasn't there. So him and Mike must have been gallivanting around or something. Yeah, interesting. Okay, now let's talk about some of the major highlights of some of the sessions that we attended, and let's start with you, Jay.
I've really talked about most of the sessions that I went to. I didn't get too many, but there's the IBM screen reader,
right.
The iAccessible 2 session. I went to Larry Skutkan's presentation on the Icon.
Now, which one did you go to? Did you go to the programming one, too?
No, the other one.
Yeah.
A basic overview and introduction of it. He does a very good job of presenting. and I went to a session on low vision research where a couple of people from a university in Canada did a research study and showed that there's very little research on low vision.
Oh, boy.
And I spent just about all the rest of my time in the exhibit hall, either at the AFB booth or going around to other booths.
Sure. Now, I had an opportunity to go to the programming of the ICON presentation, which Larry and I think his name was, oh, boy, Mike? I'm sorry.
That sounds right.
I think that's right. And they had this thing at 8 o'clock in the morning, which the very first thing I said to Larry when I went in there was, you guys are absolutely, they have, of course, had no control over this, but I said, you know, you guys are absolutely nuts asking geeks to come in here at 8 o'clock in the morning when, you know, we probably haven't had enough coffee to even consider ourselves awake, or Coke, or whatever you drink.
That means both ICON sessions were at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, it was crazy. Right. I couldn't believe he was up that early. And, but he does like to get up early from hearing his podcast. He's always gotten up pretty early, that is. But it was really kind of fascinating. I've never been to a session before where you get a stack of Braille paper and it's Python code.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was really kind of cool, actually. And they walk through, you know, setting up the init procedures and talking about, you know, how to program the ICON and what it was going to be like, and talking about the developer interface. And I just wish I was a... I just wish it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. But other than that, it was a really, really interesting presentation, and they showed a hangman game, and they gave you the code to the hangman game, I have the notes on that. I'll post the links to where you can get more information on that. I think it's tech.aph.org/mm, I believe.
Yeah,
is the
exactly.
Yeah, I think that's the link. And
they're also going to have a facility in the Braille Note where people—I'm sorry—in the ICON.
The ICON, uh-huh.
Where people are going to be able to contribute and/or sell programs. Basically, each ICON has a serial number, so that they'll have a facility where developers and authors will be able to sell programs out in the community.
One of the things that I asked was, did they plan on making the source code of the ICON firmware, you know, and software like the RSS reader and things like that, open source? And I went by and I spoke to Mark about this, and there's no commitment on this at all, but I did put some bugs in his ears, you know, his ear, to say, hey, you know, what about maybe if you charge, you know, $4.95 and allow people access to, you know, like the ICON developer network, you know, the IDN. And,
well, they got it. There may be some constraints because of the GPL or GNU license that a lot of that's under as well. I don't know.
Yeah. Now there are parts of it. There are parts of it that that are already open source. And one of the things that Mark told me is that, you know, you really don't need the source because everything is available to you. You can call it. You know, everything is open, and you can call whatever components you need. The main piece that they're using, at least for the RSS reading capability, is an open source Python project that does RSS feed, you know, work. So, you know, it was interesting though. I really was getting kind of excited about you know, potentially getting involved in doing some, you know, programming with the ICON, and very, very, very interesting. I really, really actually enjoyed that session quite a bit.
I think the icon's going to be the thing for geeks, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're also running a version of the Firefox browser on the ICON, too. I find that interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder how they're getting that to work.
Well, it's Mozilla. And
yeah.
So it's probably just running a Linux version of Firefox.
Cool.
Yeah, very interesting.
Better than Lynx.
Well, hey, yeah, or Gopher.
That GW Micro had on Microsoft Outlook interesting because they decided that they wanted to go in to the DOM, grab the information they need, and then spit it back out in an interface that they thought would be easier for blind people to use. And I've never seen that approach to a commercial app before.
Yeah, what'd you think of that, Randy?
Uh, I thought it was really interesting, and I liked the decisions they made.
Yeah.
I think it basically meant that, you know, you can go by day, by week, or by month, and the view is very easy to read.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It was that was a very, very good session. We definitely had some fun in that session.
Yes, I believe you almost took a trip out the window.
Oh, okay. we're not going to get into that tonight. Jeff, being the smart aleck that he is, sometimes tried to play a little joke on Doug, and it turned out that I was the butt of the result, which was fine. That was fun, and. I saw Doug the next day, and he says, "Yeah, how'd you like your trip out the window?" And oh boy. Anyway, it's good when you can joke around with vendors. That's for sure. Let's see. Now, what sessions did you find particularly interesting, Mika?
Well, some of the ones that we've talked about.
About already.
In addition, there was one, I've got my little one-volume quick Braille CSUN guide here, and there was one called Update on U.S. Accessible Web Litigation and Global Law and Policy.
Now, was this the stuff about the NFB and Target and stuff like that, or was that a different one?
They were two attorneys, and they did discuss the Target case as well as some other ones, but they weren't directly involved in the Target case.
Okay.
But they kind of gave an update on Target, and in that vein, they sort of spoke of the fact that with many of these cases in regard to Internet applications, that they're usually settled. So therefore, there's very little, if any, case law under the ADA.
Mm.
Now, one of the things they always speak of with Title III, which is the public accommodations piece of the ADA, in terms of applying it to websites, is that they speak of this concept of there needing to be a nexus between the website and a place of public accommodation. So in the Target case, they have that nexus, because there's such a connection between the website and the stores. And in fact, you can print out coupons to use in the stores from the Target website, and you can probably return items you buy in the Target stores. And there was some speculation that the Target case is about to be settled.
Oh, interesting.
But that certain agreements just hadn't yet been signed. That was kind of a rumor at that presentation.
Interesting. Oh, that is interesting.
But again, I posed the question at that session, like I said, what are the pros and cons of all these cases always getting settled? And they said that, well, you know, we don't really have any law or case law involving accessibility with Title III and the ADA with these settlements. But then at the same time, they don't know how it would go if the case went to court. So it's kind of interesting there.
But they're being settled. They're being settled, which means we're getting some accessibility from them. So could that argue for a precedent that, well, why would you settle the case if you didn't think the law applied?
Right. That could be as well. They also talked about a case brought in England under the DDA, the Disability Discrimination Act, in which there was a student in the field of project management, and they had to take some type of a web-based test from a company in the United States called PMI, which apparently has some type of web-based testing system. And they initially wouldn't allow this student to install a screen reader to take the web-based test, and actually a complaint was filed, and under the UK's DDA, this US company PMI was found in violation. They don't have this whole issue in the UK of there needing to be this nexus between a brick-and-mortar place of public accommodation and a website. It was enough that it was a website and that it wasn't accessible, and even that it was a U.S. based company, they found that this PMI company was in violation. And I think they're appealing it, and they kind of commented that this outfit PMI probably doesn't want to be the poster child of the DDA. And but it was interesting that across the pond that this came about, and that you know, in some ways it was said that the other countries have kind of learned the lessons of the ADA of how to write acts that are a little bit better.
I just wonder if, and it's more a question, that when you have out-of-court settlements, if the good thing is that we may win something with Target, but if there isn't anything that comes out of this that isn't case law, that still means that the burden of proof falls on every litigant who files a lawsuit saying that they've been wrong before anything substantial might happen.
Right. They also brought up an NPRM, which is a notice of proposed rulemaking that the Department of Transportation has just put out in terms of cruise lines and cruise ships, and they're talking about whether those websites need to be accessible, and they're soliciting public comment on that, and apparently they've only received about 12 or 13 comments.
Let's get now, that out there. That's something we need to get on our blogs and stuff, it sounds like.
They did, as some of you may know, the DOT some time ago did another NPRM regarding the Air Carrier Access Act, and they were talking about requirements for website accessibility as well as kiosk accessibility, and apparently that final rule is going to come out this summer, and the update at that session was that they took out the whole section about websites and kiosks, and that they want to perhaps have the same language for cruise lines as well as airlines under the ACAA. But it's a very slow process. I mean, the NPRM for the ACAA was quite a long time ago, and apparently they're just going to come out with the final rule this summer, and the word is that unfortunately it won't cover websites or kiosks or other devices out there, at least as of yet.
Okay. Go ahead, Darryl.
There's an MSN message from Peter as well.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. So Peter says, you know, last year you made, Jeff, you made a number of comments about web accessibility, and the impression was you felt that it was getting worse. After attending this year's CSUN, how do you feel about the future of web accessibility overall?
The CSUN website got worse.
Well, that's interesting, Jay, that you bring that up, because I had no issues with it. I mean, I was able to. Are you talking about the Let's Go Expo site?
That and the CSUN site. On the CSUN site, if you open a lot of the links, they open in a new window, which is a violation.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
And on the Let's Go Expo site, you could not get a full list of sessions, including the description, and that just drove me crazy. I like to take a list along, and we circulate it within AFB and decide who's going to what to cover.
That's true. You had to go through each link and then, you know, look at each one separately. You're right. I mean, there were a number of things I didn't like about the Let's Go Expo site. One of them being the fact that when they had this whole notebook thing where you had to go in and sign up for sessions. And the really annoying thing is of course that it was fine that it didn't let you sign up for two things that were at the same time, but it really would have been convenient if it would have come up and said, hey, we noticed that you're already signed up for this. Do you want to cancel that automatically? You know, so that you didn't have to go
right,
back.
Right, I noticed that.
It really was annoying.
And sometimes, you know, I would want it to let me sign up, not necessarily sign up, but block out two sessions.
Exactly.
So I have a list of what I might want to attend.
Exactly.
And often there would be two.
Yeah. The question of web accessibility is a really interesting one, and I'd be interested to see what all of you think about this. And then I did want to touch on Google before we end up tonight, because they did a presentation, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Well, I was really kind of encouraged this year. Last year, I was sort of not as... I wasn't very happy last year, simply because it was there was pretty much Yahoo out there who was coming out with their user interface, you know, accessible library, and no one else was really kind of playing the game, except for Firefox, of course, and doing the work that they were doing to make their browser accessible. The things that I heard from IBM and Mozilla and iAccessible 2 and a lot of the really exciting involvements that are going there, if they are able to get this pushed out across the industry, you know, to get Microsoft to commit to it, to get it integrated into Internet Explorer, well, then I think the future is potentially very bright for Web 2.0 and Ajax and, you know, dynamic web. So really, we're going to have to sit back and wait and see. But I think that the potential, assuming that the work that's being done is integrated into mainstream, you know, technologies, a.k.a. Well, we know it's going to be in Mozilla. But the big thing is it going to be integrated into Internet Explorer? And that's really the main question that I think is yet to be answered. It's because a lot of people have to use Internet Explorer. You know, in fact, most of my web development work at work is done using Internet Explorer because it's all based on Microsoft technologies. So I think the future is bright. I'm optimistically hopeful. So anyone else have any comments on that?
I still have some concerns regarding the increasing use of Flash in websites and the way in which it's implemented that is not accessible. A lot of times you'll see a button that says doesn't have focus and then you can't click on it. Or you actually in some pages will pull up the page, and the only way that I know it's really Flash is because someone's telling me this and I'm using my arrow and tab keys and there's nothing coming back. So, you know, that is a concern to me, and I think that the response that Adobe is giving about, you know, well, you know, we can tell you how not to do this, but we're not really going to try to do things to make it so that you won't do this. And I think that's an ongoing concern from my point of view.
Anyone else?
I would agree that we have some good building blocks and infrastructure there, but that until we can get the outside IT community, that is, you know, outside of the blindness or disability field, either make it very easy or transparent or somehow get them on board, that we're going to be left behind.
Yeah.
I also encounter Flash and the continued problem of audio captchas frequently still come up.
Yeah. Well, Ajax, I think, is even the bigger concern.
Right.
I think that's... I mean, I don't think any of us have seen the problem as it will extend itself to be in the near future. So let's just... Everyone, you know, think good thoughts. We have a call. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live. Hello? Okay. They are not here. Let's before we end up tonight, let's talk a little bit about the Google presentation that happened at CSUN. Now, how many of you had an opportunity to attend that? No one did except me.
Well, you're a trailblazer.
You did.
I guess, yeah, wow, I guess silence is golden. I was kind of excited that Google was going to be there this year. I was really looking forward to it, and I really was hoping that we would find out a lot more about where Google is headed, what their story is going to be in reference to, you know, where they're headed, where they're going. In the morning, after I attended a session over at the Hilton, I stopped by the Google booth, and I spoke to a gentleman there who I have his business card, and we're going to try to get Google on Main Menu at some point. We're going to get in touch with them and see if they'd be willing to come on. They said that TV Ramen might be someone they might be able to get in touch, have him come on and talk with us. So I spoke with them in the booth, and I got a cool Google keychain. And unfortunately, they weren't really able to talk about any future stuff, you know, about where they're heading, what direction, you know, what kind of changes are you making in Gmail and, you know, these types of things. He did say, you know, come to the session this afternoon and, you know, put two and two together and you might be able to figure out where we're headed, but we're not going to come right out and tell you. So I went to the session and it was packed. It was a very, very, very small room, and I don't know if you could have fit any more people in there. It was very, very, very crowded in there. And what they basically did was they showed these case studies. They talked about the website. They talked about the search experience. They talked about accessible search. A number of questions were brought up about, well, what about integrating accessible search technology into the main Google page? Why do we have to go to, you know, the lab site and go to accessible search there? Again, they didn't really commit to anything there. You know, they said, well, that's very interesting, and we'll look into that. They talked about Google Maps. Now, have any of you used Google Maps?
Yes, I have.
Yes.
Okay, so yes. They now have an accessible version of that. Now, I haven't played with that too much. I've played with local.google, but not with maps so much. And they now have text driving directions. Have any of you used those?
Yes, I have.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you like how accessible was it?
I thought very.
You know, what'd you think?
Yeah, I usually start out at the local Google and then go to directions, and that's the main site I use to pull up directions these days.
Yeah, interesting. So they talked about that, and they talked about their CAPTCHA, and apparently it's kind of interesting. I haven't kept an eye on this, but apparently it's been evolving over the last year or so.
I just tested it this morning.
Yeah, how does it sound, Daryl?
It's significantly improved. They have changed the type of distortion in the background, so now it sort of sounds like the voice in the background sounds like one of those Library of Congress players when you're listening to side one of
speed.
A tape and you have the switch set to side three. But then the lady's voice speaking the numbers is much louder. Easily goes over the background. It's very well enunciated.
Oh, that's great.
And she speaks slowly. There's a few seconds between each character, and then she repeats it. So after she says the string, let's just say, and once again, and then she repeats the string.
Oh, that's great.
Again.
Yeah.
So it's probably the best you could get from an audio CAPTCHA.
They said that when it first came out that 50% of the people that tried it could not get an audio CAPTCHA to work. And so their goal is to, of course, continue to work on the technology to make sure that it's not easy for spammers to bypass, but still make it easy for a human to interact with.
Did anybody talk about other authentication schemes that are coming online, other multi-factor authentication schemes that some banks are using now?
I didn't run into it all at CSUN. Did any of you?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I didn't run into that at all.
Although I know Bank of America is starting to do that, but they ask you a series of questions, and once in a while you'll get one of these questions that you've put in advance, like if you're logging in through a computer that you haven't used before with their site. Mm. So at least it is accessible.
Interesting. Now, going back to Google here before we run out of time, they talked about Gmail, and that definitely spurred a lot of interesting conversation in the room. And they're continuing to make the text interface better. They now have headings for a lot of the Gmail text interface. Have you tried it, Daryl?
It's a little better. I still can't get to the settings.
Right. Now, that was a very interesting discussion. A lot of people brought that up. It seemed like everybody had the same theme, you know. Okay, settings. that was definitely brought up. I brought it up saying, you know, I'm a little tired of answering people's... Not really, but I mean, it's probably one of the most frequently... one of the most frequent comments I get is, hey, how do I get my Gmail mail in my POP3 client? And so I brought that up to Google. I said, hey, can you at least make that work in the settings dialog of the text interface? Because, you know, that would resolve probably 99% of what people want to do. And they like that feedback. But we didn't really leave, you know, the Google session with any idea of, you know, wow, we're, you know, there's not a lot really new, unfortunately.
At least they fixed the caption. It stayed fixed and it's working.
That's right.
I mean, at least that's a start.
That's right.
It was really, really frustrating last year, but thank you.
The other thing that, and I don't remember exactly what the number was, but they indicated at the booth that they have been hiring more engineers specifically to deal with accessibility issues. And when I hear that from companies, that says something to me that maybe their level of commitment is real and not just
lip service.
You know, you may not like the speed at which things happen, but, you know, when they start dedicating manpower and they're paying people to do this. And the lady I was talking to made a point that I thought was interesting. She said, you know, we got our start by trying to be a relatively simple, uncluttered interface. So, you know, being accessible certainly lines up with where we see ourselves on a whole lot of levels. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I should be a little more jaded, maybe, but I kind of believe them.
Yeah, interesting. All right, well, we're almost done. I want to give all of you an opportunity to make a short comment. We have about 5 minutes or so before the end of the show. So let's start with you, Jay.
Well, I have covered just about everything about CSUN, except that I was a little concerned about the slippage in the accessibility of the conference, and the Braille programs didn't have advertising or Braille maps, and there weren't current Braille menus in the restaurant. In the restaurants in the Marriott, I didn't really get over to the Hilton. But the whole staff at CSUN has turned over in the last year and a half, and they've really lost something as far as being the leading conference in the field as far as accessibility.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do what I can to try to change that.
Well, that'd be great.
On it and working with them. And then, of course, I want to direct people to the Access World.
Well, of course.
Tonight.
What's coming up in Access World, Jay?
Well, in May, we're going to have a review of the SmartView Xtend from Humanware, an overview of Pocket PC access and defining the terms, which a lot of people probably don't really know for sure, the difference between smartphones and Pocket PCs.
Oh, that would be great.
Symbian phones. A review of the NoteTeller 2, which we did because of how money identification has been in the news, and some really good news about appliance accessibility, which we've been covering. Whirlpool has made some of their washers and dryers much more accessible by adding tones as you turn from cycle to cycle so that you can follow what cycle you're setting the machines for.
Well, wow, I wish I would have known that about 2 months ago.
Sorry.
That's okay. I just bought a washer and dryer.
And the Access
I'll
World.
Bet your wife wishes that you'd have known that too.
Okay, Randy.
The website is afb.org/accessworld.
That's great. Thank you, Jay, very, very much, and we appreciate
much,
you coming on tonight.
Thank you.
Randy, go right ahead.
Okay. I would also like to take my hat off in a sort of facetious way to the fine internet service that was provided in the hotel while we were at CSUN, and also
that's a good one.
A compliment to the outsourcing technical support, which did not solve the problem. So, you know, it kind of goes back to show that, you know, it's better to keep support in the country, and it's better to work with folks that can get your problems solved. So, it is a testament, I think, to our vendors, and in a lot of senses, that they're able to do the things they can do to solve our problems, and that while we may have issues with support on occasion, so does the general public. And I think our experience with the internet in the hotel was certainly a living example of that.
Right.
Other than that,
we got about a minute and a half, Randy.
Okay. I really enjoyed myself, and I'm looking forward to going next year.
All right. Thanks, Mika.
I think we've covered most everything. It was a good show. I mean, no earth-shattering new products, but it was still, as usual, a good show. I've been going, as I said, since 2000. Apparently, for those of you thinking of coming next year, they're going to move all the exhibits into some type of pavilion in the parking lot.
Into a tent.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
Something like that. And they may not officially be using the Hilton anymore.
Oh, boy. Well, that may be a good thing. I don't like the Hilton. It's pretty hard to navigate around, at least for me it was. Okay, and Daryl, do you have any last comments?
It's been a great show, and I appreciate all of you for filling me in on the CSUN conference that, unfortunately, I was planning on it but was not able to attend. So you guys have all brought me up to date, and
that's
as
great.
Well as all the other listeners, of course. Thank you very much.
Indeed. Well, again, thank you to all of the guests who appeared on Main Menu and Main Menu Live tonight. We really do appreciate you, and we'll have to have all of you back. And we're running out of time, so we're going to go ahead and close out the show, but we'll be back next week where we'll be talking about Thunder on a Stick. That's right, and that's going to be a fun one. So that's what's coming up on Main Menu Live, and we'll have a little bit about Thunder in the first hour as well as some other new content here on ACB Radio's Main Menu. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.